Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
Listening to Live from the Path. We're coming from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. It's good to be with you this evening. What are you guys drinking when you're listening to the show? You got you folks at home. What do you got? You got a little coffee, a little tea, a little water? I'm trying to figure out what people drink when they listen to the program.
My mom says whiskey.
I think that's fair.
Makes it go down easier.
That's right. All right, so here's what we got going on the show tonight. We got traditional stuff, right? We got advice on Dear Life from the Path. We got immigrating Pope style. No, Pope is out. Pope didn't make it. Hey, man, Pope's been rounding people up.
He's the best Pope ever.
I know.
He really is.
I kind of want a Pope. just because this guy's it's just interesting to listen to. What was he saying this week or today? He's been in the Philippines, and he riled a bunch of people up because they were talking about birth control, and he said, just because we're Catholic doesn't mean we have to act like rabbits.
So that's a freaking Pope. He's the best, man. I tell you what.
We need to be responsible parenting.
Marriage counseling with the Pope.
Stop it.
So, you know, anyway, he handles his own affairs. All right. So anyway, that's one of the stuff we got going on tonight. Also, the boy who didn't see heaven. We're gonna talk a little bit about that. I have something else that is I could do without. I came up with something else occurred to me this week, and I thought, yeah, I can do without that. Mike wants to know why we even read the Psalms.
Yeah, the whole thing confused me, to be honest with you. And it might just be my personality bent, but like, I don't know. Like, I've always had a hard time with the Psalms, and so I read them, and I'm like, am I supposed to be agreeing with this? Or against what he's saying, or feeling the same way, because really I feel like I got a lot more pages to go, and there's a lot of Psalms here, and I'm not really, you know, picking up on it.
So Psalms are tough. I remember you first start becoming like a Bible guy, and you start reading stuff, and you're thinking, I need something encouraging. I'm going to read the Psalms, and you open up, it's like, smite him.
Yeah.
And I'm going, this is the Psalms.
Yeah. There's a whole, I'm only through like the first 16 or whatever. I just got on the tail end of Job, and I'm like, Psalms, all right, fine, let's do this thing. And I start reading them, I'm like, you know, he's basically saying, listen to me, Lord. Why are you so far away from me? I've done nothing wrong. I'm righteous. I'm the best man ever. I'm like, am I supposed to be agreeing with this? And Job just got yelled at for like 35 chapters for this exactly same thing. And David's just rolling it out. Yeah. And I'm like, I don't know whether I'm supposed to be agreeing with this or trying to think through it. Or I'm just confused.
All right. So we're going to hit that. why do we even read the Psalms? Also, secular versus Solomon tonight, boys. I got one put together. It's going to be a doozy. I feel like you. I feel like you were in my clutches, and you're going to go down something fierce.
I already feel like I should bail.
So the nature of this game is I'm going to give you a proverb, and you need to tell me whether it's a big biblical bit of wisdom or whether it is a secular bit of wisdom. And you get a point for getting it right. If it's a secular bit of wisdom, you have to tell me the country of origin. What kind of peoples believe in this wisdom that isn't may or may not actually be biblical? Because there are hints of that stuff in some of the wisdom of the world. All right, that's it. And also, what the five mistakes that will destroy your church's effectiveness and what to do about it. We may hit on that too. That was just something we were kind of chatting about earlier this week, so we're going to talk through that. All right, now before we get going any further, I want to give a big thank you out to our sponsors, Bob Eisenhower with the Eisenhower Team. Go to EisenhowerTeam.com, and this may or may not be the time to buy or sell a house. Bob Eisenhower is the man to do that. So if you are in the market or thinking about being in the market, get a hold of Bob. That's EisenhowerTeam.com. He's a good friend of the show, a good friend of mine, and I've had very positive experiences with Bob and his team. Also, with Westfield Veterinary Hospital, go to WestfieldVetHospital.com. You can set up an appointment online, kick the year off right by A, stopping kicking the dog, and bring him in for the right checkup. Have him checked out for all the stuff that you're supposed to check him out. You know, fulfill those resolutions. What?
I'm going to tell you something about a dog.
Okay.
So we had a neighbor, and some things happened at his place and whatever, and they said, well, look, we got to get rid of the dog. And I said, what? He goes, yeah, we got to get rid of the dog. We'd like to give the dog to you guys. It's like a 6-year-old golden retriever, lived outside its whole life. And, of course, the girls love this dog, right? And I'm like, ah, man. And I always seem like the curmudgeon here. So I'm like, sure, we'll get the dog.
Uh-oh.
This dog, I'm telling you what, he's a Houdini of dogs. I mean, this thing, every time I've tried to cage it or put it in a room even, yeah, I mean, it's unstoppable. It knows how to get out of every kennel. He broke the kennel. I put one of those climbers clasps on the kennel.
Yeah.
He opened it and got out. We locked him in a room. We didn't lock him. We just shut the door. He opened a round doorknob. I mean, not even like the straight handled ones where you can like land on it with a paw and open it. Like he put two paws on it and let himself out. And so we put another door on there, and then you know, get him barricaded in there. But we have a small cat door cut out so the cat can get in and out. He crawled through it. I mean, seriously, the dog is outrageous. I have no idea what to do with him. And the worst part of it is he can't be disciplined. He's 6 years old, and every time he does something terrible, you know, you'll look at him and be like, no, no. And he'll look at you like, I forgive you for yelling at me. And then he'll just go back to doing whatever nasty thing he was doing before, taking food off the counter, breaking stuff, tearing things apart, and you're like, no, and look really mad at him. He'll just look at you like, I'm not sure why you're yelling, but I can comfort you. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. It's the most frustrating dog I've ever had.
Oh, no.
You should take him to Westfield Veterinary Hospital.
He'd probably escape. I'm half worried that when I get home, the car will be gone, and he's up at the gas station buying Alpo in a can. He's outrageous.
All right, anyway, Westfield Veterinary Hospital, they're right here in Johnston. Take the dog in, give them a call. They handle all kinds of pets, too, a bunch of different folks. Anyway, you can do that. Thanks for listening to Life from the Path. And if nothing else, even if you're not going to frequent those establishments, give them a call, send an email, knock on the door, and say, hey, thanks for sponsoring Life from the Path. All right, Mike, so let me hear more about the Psalm problems.
Here's the deal. So like I said, I got through done Job, which is my emotional high, and I just kind of cascaded right into the Psalms. And I've never done well with the Psalms. Like they're I don't know, maybe I'm just not bent in the how I feel range, you know, and exploring the depths of what I think is happening or how it affects me. But I started reading through them, and I'm like, you know, I can totally get on board with you know, the adulation things and the glory that David's writing to God. And I'm like, I feel it, but I don't feel it to the extent that he feels it. And so I thought, well, okay, well, that's a place to start, you know. So I kept reading through them. And then, like, the next psalm, he's like, you know, you've let me down. You're far away from me. I've done great things. Look at me. I showed you blameless, and you don't appear. I'm like, wait a minute. You can't talk to God like that. Job just got done trying to play that same argument, and he got whooped on for like a three chapter straight. You know, you want to keep this up? And so, frankly, I'm just confused by the Psalms. Like, I know there's pearls, and like, frankly, I get stuck on some of the Psalms will have, you know, phrases that they used in old hymns. And so then I'm off track for at least 5 minutes singing, oh, Lord, how majestic. I'm lost. You know, I'm like, and that's all it keeps going through my head over and over again. I'm like, I'm getting nothing out of this Bible reading. And then I'll stop and pray. And I'm like, Lord Jesus, I'm confused by the Psalms. And so I understand why you put them there, kind of, but like, I'm having a hard time. So that's kind of my question is when people read the Psalms, you know, why? What is it? Why are they there? I'm having a hard time.
What's your experience with the Psalms, Phyllis?
Well, it's poetry. A lot of it is, and it's songs. So yeah, you read it differently than history or doctrine, or, you know, it's not a doctrine book necessarily, although it might have doctrine contained in it. Yeah, it's one of those things you kind of think, you disagree? Or, did I? No. Yeah.
Emotion and
yeah,
soul.
Yeah.
And
are you saying I have no soul?
That's your weak spot.
We forgot a soul.
You're not a deeply emotional guy. You're not at all emotionally driven. I mean, you know, you're not
love language.
You're not gonna. That's not how you resonate with things. I mean, you read a story, you're looking for what's the action, what's the hero like, what are the virtues, but you're not so much looking at what was the. What is it that makes your wife cry?
I mean, can the Psalms not be for me then? Like, there has to be.
There can be, yeah.
Yeah, I think they're for you. Yeah. I think you got to mm-hmm. digest them with the right perspective, right? Yeah. So, like, you are getting a lot of different things with the Psalms. Like, that's kind of mm-hmm. the cool thing about it is it's varied, but you can't read it in a linear fashion. You can't read yeah. that Psalm 1 goes with Psalm 2.
Yeah.
Psalm 2 goes with Psalm 3, right? Like, right. And that's kind of a problem. You have to really dive in and digest that particular psalm and let yourself kind of be put in that kind of space. Like, what situation is he in? Why is he what would bring a man to say, you know, God, where are you? Right. And kind of let just the human emotion kind of play through. The Psalms are actually of a lot of the stuff that's biblical. are very honest portrayal of sometimes fallible men and how they're reacting to God, right? Mm-hmm. Like, not just because David said it doesn't mean it's gold. There's a number of very curious items in the Psalms. But, like, I think we see a number of things come together and why the Psalms would be important. One, I think we get to see kind of the emotions and the interaction with God of a man that God said, this is a man after my own heart, right? And so we get to see that man act a fool as well. There's a little bit of solace in the Psalms where you're like, that guy's outrageous, and God still said, this man.
Yeah.
And so we get to see that. I think we get to see a guy, like, where sometimes I might feel guilty by, like, saying, look at a certain circumstance in my life and being like, God, where are you in this? Because I'm the last guy. Like, I don't want to be the guy that's like, I'm blaming God, or I'm saying, you know, I expected God to do something and he didn't, and now I'm embarrassed or upset. But it's like, I just want to know. I think it makes it reasonable to be like, to see that and see how David's reacting. And yeah. I don't know, there's a little bit of comfort in that if you can, you know, get across the part that he's acting like a boob.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, you look at David, you know, he's this manly man who'll rip the head off of a bear with his hands. And then he'll wear his emotion on his sleeves, you know, and oh, Lord, you're so far away. He's everything. Yeah. And he'll sit down and play the lyre, you know, like a skilled musician, enough that the king, Saul, is like, hey, I want that boy in my temple playing for me personally. This guy has it all. You know, I don't know. So read the psalm while you're thinking of him ripping off a bear's head or something. And that might help you.
I mean, here's the deal. I'm not like a testosterone driven goon. Do you understand? Here's the thing. Is what I'm actually taking from it is like there is an entire football field of dealing with God, and I work from the 240s. Do you know what I'm saying? I work from the opponent's 40 to my 40, and that's kind of where I live. Kind of right in the center. Yeah. I don't get too crazy. You know. Down, I don't get too crazy high. I just kind of operate in the 40. Mm-hmm. And so, like, some of it is that the more of the truth is God's probably designed me to operate from 20 to 20. I may not be in zone to end zone, right? But, like, I've probably been designed a little bit more than I'm giving credence to. But I don't know. Right now, it's hard to go from my Job mode, which I really love on, and then I roll the Psalms, and I'm like, I can't take much more of this stuff, you know? Ain't nobody saying, here's how I feel. You know, here's what I'm feeling like. You know, I'm like, you know, where's the guys that are yelling, David? Where are those guys?
Well, and you know, I think the other thing then is to, you may not recognize yourself in there, but recognize that other people around you may feel that way, right? And you have the ability to kind of understand them more by seeing how other people talk.
He's definitely a man of passion. Yeah. I mean, everything's either, like you said, he's high, God is great, he's awesome. To smite my enemy.
Right. Kill a man. Why am I putting up with this?
Throw the babies. Well, who cares?
Yeah. It's really a fascinating read.
But I would say, you know what I would say, though, is like a lot of people try to go through the Psalms like in chunks. And I really would just read, like, I'd go one Psalm and then not necessarily move on to another Psalm.
Yeah. Like, you don't need to listen to the whole top 40 when you sit down.
Yeah, because actually it starts to bleed together after a while, right? Like, my mind just starts to compartmentalize it. Like, he's sad here, he's pretty happy here, he's sad here, he's angry here. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't actually pay attention to much of what he's saying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. I think that's one way to do it. Is like, you can't, a lot of people will read something and then read a psalm or a couple psalms or something. I wouldn't recommend reading 10, 20, just like I wouldn't recommend reading poetry like that. Like, it's just not a good way to take it in. It's not the right kind of essence of doing it. Mm-hmm. Hmm. Unless it's like Shel Silverstein, you can kind of pile through those. Those are fun.
Yeah, agree.
That's not quite David, though.
Okay.
All right. So what do you think, Mike? Recommendation to you meet another man like you, and he says, "Hey, I'm struggling with the Psalms." What do you say to him?
I say you turn about 30 pages back, and Job's there waiting for you. After you get done with that, you call me. We'll talk about what you need to change.
Okay. All right. I think that's fair. All right. So this week I ran into another something that I could just do without. Last week I could do without guys that say that presuppose something that they're offering will bless me or bless other people. It's presumptuous at best. And so another thing that I ran across this week something that I could do without is this. It happens in all circles, but like I see it, I guess, more pronounced in Christian circles. Is this false outrage when people that don't love God act like they don't love God, and then we're like on the floor about it and can't imagine that this is going on. There was an article going around on grist.org, G-R-I-S-T.org,
All the way to grist, huh?
Yeah.
It's really traveling the globe.
So, and the title of the thing was "Why I'll Never Have Kids and Why You Shouldn't Either," and basically was the context of the article was first of all, we shouldn't be bringing any more people in here. We're running out of water. The Earth is basically we're destroying the Earth, governmentally, politically, environmentally. Like, why would you want to bring any kids in here? And that's an excuse to not reproduce. But basically, you really shouldn't want kids. And plus, this woman is gay, and so she never even considered having kids. It's real easy for the heterosexuals to bring kids in, but gays just can't as easily. And so, just we should give it up. We should give it up. We shouldn't bother having kids. And so I read this article because I saw some guys that were outraged about it. I'm like, maybe I should be outraged. I want in on outrage. So I read it and I thought, I'm not outraged at all. This seems like a pretty reasonable stance from someone who doesn't believe what I believe on a number of different levels. And I thought, this outrage is completely uncalled for. This tamper tantrum, this the world is coming to an end. Where does our culture come from? All this business. All they did was take the life that you live around the people that you live it around. And one guy decided to write down his life, right? Or a lady decided to write down his life as opposed to, living it. And so, I could really do without some of this false outrage business. Like, let's deal with the world for what it is. I'm not saying you can't get outraged at anything. I can't say that you shouldn't react to a culture that walks away from God. But, like, it's almost whining. It's almost whining about, oh, I can't believe these people are acting this way. Really? You can't believe they're acting this way. I can believe it. I'm not surprised about this at all. Like, I've seen the way I act, and you probably just need a little bit of alcohol and throw my Bible out for a couple of years, and you could probably paint my life like that. So I don't know. I could do without it. I could do without the false outrage, as if we don't understand that when people don't love God, they do things that God wouldn't otherwise approve of, and they don't live the life that we live, and we need to stop being outraged about it.
Yeah, you know what? Actually, that makes it hard. Like in our arena, as Christian media, like the world does not need one more Christian outlet that really spends its time bashing on everybody that doesn't know Jesus. You know what I'm saying? Like, here's what the society's doing wrong. Here's where the government has led us down the wrong path. These are all signs that people don't know Jesus, right? Like, it's basically just showing that the workers are few. You know what I'm saying? It's basically the Lord going, yeah, see?
Yeah.
I need more dudes. and so sometimes it makes it hard. Like, if you want a popular Christian show, you kind of got to be willing to bash on the opposition, right? Like, that's kind of what the game is. That's what is popular anywhere, right? That's why right-wing conservative radio is popular, because they spend all their time not saying why they're great, but why the left moderate is terrible, right? Mm-hmm. Same thing with leftist radio. All political radio is the same way, and actually most of Christian media has kind of turned out to that same way. And so, it's really fruitless, frankly, and there's really, I mean, any amount of time. It's even on our end. Like, I'll check those articles out really just to see the depth of how poor it is. But, like, I'm not there for the right reasons, right? I'm there to be entertained for probably 5 minutes going, yeah, that's even farther than I thought. Yeah. But that's pretty much it. It's all I'm doing there. There's really no inherent value in it.
Okay. Anyway, that's it. Something I could do without. Hey, if there's something you could do without and you want to share it with us, send us an email, info@lifefromthepath.org. And if we select your email, Pete, then we would read it on the air.
That's the problem with being the only fan of the show. We know when you did not email.
Yeah, I do. I know when Pete hasn't listened to the show, because he usually tweets something about it. And if I don't see anything, I'm like, hey, the one person that listens to the program didn't listen this week. We're really on rough times.
We really hit the table.
By the way, Pete, I saw that on the Twitter, and that was a picture of me.
Yeah, Pete, you guys, if you don't get a chance to subscribe to Life from the Path on the Twitter, there's been some interesting pictures of Boova, courtesy of Pete.
He's reported to be a heavy cuddler.
I would cuddle you so hard. It was weird.
There was a story out this week. There was a book about a boy who claimed he visited heaven. And it was quite a popular book, and he's recently come out and recanted the story. Said he made it up.
Oh, man.
Heaven forbid.
Yeah. and they're finally pulling the book from the shelves. Now, he's not the only guy on the shelf, so I mean they've not cleared the shelf out by any means. But this fella at least is now off the shelf. And so I saw some interesting reactions for some Jesus folks, and maybe this falls in the same category of the false outrage. But it's like, it's very disappointing how invested someone is to something that is not biblical work, right?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
how big portions, chunks of someone's faith are tied into an experience by someone else that didn't make the canon. And yeah. like, I don't know, like I saw some pretty heated arguments about the legitimacy of the book. And like, I get it. I don't believe it. That's me, okay? I know people that do believe it, and I think they legitimately love Jesus. So there you go. It's not a hill to die on unless it starts screwing with your mind. And I saw a higher percentage of people where it appears that it's been screwing with their mind than I would have guessed. I didn't think there were so many people that were so invested in the fact that this dude had gone to heaven and taken a peek around and thought that Jesus was cute. Like, I guess I didn't realize there was that much caught up in it. I just thought it was some people like, oh, that could be, okay. Surprise to me,
It is surprising. I think people, they kind of cling to something like that because they figure it's proof. You know, see, we told you it was right. And it's like, wasn't he like a child?
Yeah.
When it
he was a 6 years old.
6 years old. So you're going to, like, rest your faith, your foundation on a six-year-old?
It's the same kid that continues to think the Easter Bunny stops by.
Yeah,
you know
yeah.
I mean, is that's where you want to put your rock?
So I've never read any of those books because I tend to, I just don't care. You know, it's like, it could be true, it might not, it might be a hallucination from, you know,
chemicals in the life brain.
Stuff, chemical, I don't know.
Could be dead on.
What I do know is what the Bible says. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, here's the thing. It's like, when I hear these stories, like, my honest reaction is, seeing Jesus would be cool.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Not whether the guy saw him or didn't see him. Like, what caused it? I don't care. I just think seeing Jesus face to face would be pretty cool. You know what I'm saying? And that's kind of what I take away from it. It gives me pause to think, I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah. But and, really, and it's going to happen sooner enough the way it is.
Yeah. It'll show up, you know? And so, like, I don't know. There was a time when I was really interested in this guy, you know, where people telling stories of how they meet Jesus and they meet their family or whatever. And I'm like, you know, there's parts of it I'm just not buying, right? Like, God brings glory unto himself. I don't know, the first thing that he's going to do when you get up to be in his presence is let you meet grandpa. You know what I'm saying? That seems counterintuitive to me. I'm not saying it is. It just seems odd.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, long story short, like, I just want to meet Jesus. And so, you know, I'm excited that other people are excited to do the same thing. And whether it's true, whether it's not true, like, I just think meeting Jesus would be awesome.
So do you remember the movie Ghost? Was that Patrick?
Yeah, Swayze? Patrick Swayze.
Yeah. When that came out,
it was Bruce Willis.
It was a different one, different ghost. That came out, you know, Bruce. Patrick is a.
Should read the Psalms, Dad. Calm you down.
You know, he's living with his girlfriend. He doesn't know Jesus. All this stuff, whatever. He dies and goes to heaven. You know, and the bad guy dies and goes to hell. Kind of, you know, in the nutshell, the movie. And I remember some gal coming back to church saying, I don't know how you could see that movie and not become a believer in Jesus. You know, they were just excited. It was going to cause revival in the land. I'm like, this had nothing to do with Jesus. Yeah. You get to go to heaven because he was a nice guy. You felt sorry for him. Of course he gets to go to heaven. I thought, it's unbiblical. How's anyone going to go to Jesus?
The Westboro Baptist Church thinks the same thing about their signs. I don't know how people could see this and not immediately convert to Christianity. Ghost evangelism.
Think most of the stuff is spelled right. It's multicolored. It has all the attractiveness of a garage sale.
We put the word hate in there. Come on.
There's a little bit of controversy to stir things up. I remember having a conversation when that Heaven is for Real came up by with the other boy that had claimed to have been there. And there were people or some folks that around me that had been reading it. And they were like, hey, Ben, you want to borrow it? I'm like, nah. That's all right.
Really.
I don't need to read that stuff. And they're like, why not? Don't you believe it? And I kind of went through and said, you know, if you die once and then you're in heaven. And my wife goes, so I don't know where I found the right woman. The right woman who can say something and then it stumps me. Like something that I'm like, oh, I got this. I know everything. And then like a very simple, basic question. My wife goes, well, what about Lazarus? And I said, shoot! Lazarus puts a bit of a linchpin into my confidence. I said, Paul wrote later. End of story. Let's go. Grab the kids out of the way. We're heading home. So I may have backed on how firm I was because I thought, shoot, Lazarus. Yep. Interesting. But he didn't say anything either. So I thought, eh. I still didn't want to read it, but I thought the minute I walk in any situation and I'm like ultra confident that I've got this, like all I need to do is I always should ask my wife. Anytime I'm really confident, I say, woman, I'm going to explain something to you two and you tell me where I'm wrong. And she's got him. And I said, that's a good woman the Lord has sent me.
You know, I've often thought about Lazarus, you know, it's like with all these books we have out in the modern day, I thought, don't you think, but like we have, you know, Apostle Paul's letters, we have Matthew, we have the Gospels, we have all these ancient documents. If, don't you think Lazarus would have written something down if it was that fantabulous, you know, of a story, that that great story that he would have written? We kind of have that, too. That'd be like one of the extra gospels of the story of
At
Lazarus.
At least a falsified account, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. If you're going to make up a story, why attribute it to Barnabas? Attribute it to Lazarus.
Yeah, yeah. I was there 3 days.
People don't even like Paul. Let's just say Lazarus wrote this down.
Chapter 1. In which I stinketh.
This was blown way out of proportion.
I could smell my lips so rotting.
It wasn't near as bad as they let on.
Everybody likes to land on that I'm smelly. And here's the deal.
First off, let me clear the air.
That's right, the tabloid gospel letter. It wasn't like that.
So I was playing checkers in heaven, and then I heard a voice, Lazarus, come forth. No!
Luke's never liked me. He wanted to make it take his turn to make me look foolish.
Heck, I'm kind of glad Jesus didn't make it in time. You ever live with those two ladies? One of them was all nagging about, and the other one doesn't do anything. All right. We're going
to... Lazarus, that's all.
We should publish a false account of Lazarus.
Oh, yeah, we should definitely do that.
I mean, don't represent his gospel or anything, but it would be kind of fun to put together.
Yeah, we'll just write the falsified account of Lazarus. And then we'll put it on the internet. People debate it for days.
Yeah.
There's no evidence of this antiquity. I can't believe this.
The new pseudepigrapha. We stain it with tea. Is that how it's done?
We'll carefully line out exactly how we made it look the way it looked. We'll publish it anyway, and people will consider it the Lord's word, and they'll move on it.
By the way, Jesus had a wife. The end.
But the sad part about this story is that the story of the publisher really pressuring this kid to not say it was false.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I just have little respect. I should maybe have more, but I don't have that much respect for publishers. Honestly, they're a business. They're trying to make money. A lot of them in the Christian world, they're making some good stuff, and there's some good products out there. But why would you discredit your own credibility by doing something like that?
You know what would be hard, though, is like being put in that kid's dad's position. I'm not saying that it would be impossible. But, like, if my kid went through a life, a life-altering state and woke up and told me they saw Jesus, I feel like I would hug her and let it be for a while, and then I would try to explain to her maybe a little bit later on how you probably didn't. I'd say, he's probably with you and whatnot. But, like how do you look at your six-year-old son or daughter and say, you didn't?
This is not, that didn't
happen. You didn't see that, you know?
Well, you know, and what this kid said is he said, I'd said that story to get attention. I hadn't read the Bible, and he'd been reading the Bible, and he says, it didn't happen. He said, I made up for attention. People are profiting off lies. This cannot be true based upon his reading
of
the Bible.
I love this kid.
It was very, very short, succinct thing. Yeah. I mean, he didn't go I was kind of afraid that when I saw it that maybe he's looking for some attention on the opposite side of this thing. Mm-hmm. But, like, I mean, he wrote, like, three paragraphs, very succinct, did not provide any long arguments. He's just like, I made it up for attention. They should stop publishing it, that no one should profit from these lies. Jesus Christ is the only way. Love this guy.
Sweet. Yeah.
That was pretty good. Yeah. He really handled it well. So, all right. Now I kind of want to read it.
But that's the same reason you want to read that other crap. You know what I'm saying? Just to see how far the depth of not true is.
No. Well, there had to be some coaching going on for six. I mean, for a six-year-old, there had to be some detail for a book.
That's a whole book, know. Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, that's true.
You think there's layers of lies, you know.
You know, it's very difficult, actually. We're talking about Christian publishing, and even Christian radio is kind of the same way. Where, like, I mean, you got to fill the air with what people want to hear, right? Like, you still got to do it. Stay on, and like being a publisher or a radio guy that has to say, like, this goes on. Hey, I completely disagree with this. I don't know if you guys remember when we were on the 10 o'clock slot on Saturday nights, and we moved to 7. Because there was like a national, he may even still be on here as far as I know, but like a guy doing prayer over the air. And like, I listened to this guy for probably 45 minutes one night, and I thought, this is awful. This is awful. Like I couldn't support this at all. And, but it's a very tough thing. Cause I mean, like, obviously people were calling in, they're interacting with it. I mean, I'm sure the guy would listen to our program and be like, a bunch of yahoos.
Right, this is awful.
They shouldn't be allowed on. I mean, I hear you. Legitimate.
Good point.
But like, it's got to be a very difficult thing, given the wide array of content that is available in a publishing world, in a blogging world, in a radio world. Because the more you say no to, the more, A, you've limited your audience, because people don't actually all believe the same thing, mm-hmm. right? And aren't always open to being hearing new things, I suppose myself included. But it's just a difficult thing. It's a very difficult thing to say, to decide, is this okay? Am I vouching for this, for even passing it on?
No, that's true.
Right? What responsibility does a Christian publisher have for publishing, you know, that, I don't know, that one guy's book where he said he spent, you know, X minutes in hell, or, you know, like all those things? And is, I would feel some level of responsibility if we were letting people on our show and they were constantly, and they were saying things that I knew that I didn't think were biblically accurate, to have let them on. And I guess not follow up, because we interviewed that one guy, the Doomsday guy, that was under the Harold Camping folks.
Yeah.
And so, like, we had him in because we wanted to talk to him. Like, I was interested in his discussion. We talked afterwards. We clarified where we stood on things and what we thought was the truth compared to what he said. And, like, I think that's okay. But I don't know. I just wonder that, there's some of that worries me, that, like, what kind of conscience or lack of do you have to say, well, I may not believe it, but I'll publish it for other people to buy and suck in, even if I think it points them away from Christ in some way or the other. I'm not saying all that stuff does that. There's a wide range of things that I don't believe that I don't think points someone away from Christ. But, like, I don't know. That just seems like a very, very tough thing that I feel like I couldn't even handle. Like, I wouldn't be able to handle a job like that. I think my conscience would eat away with me. I can barely read a devotional. So, anyway, I just think it's difficult.
Or the Psalms.
I can read the Psalms.
Oh, crap. 40 to 40. That's me. Junk.
And now, for America's fastest growing game show, Secular or Solomon?
All right, you've meandered your way into America's fastest growing internet game show. That's unproven. Asterisk, whatever it takes. Secular versus Solomon. Here's the basic nature of this game. I'm going to give you a proverb, a bit of wisdom. And basically, the goal is to, can we understand, do we know where wisdom is coming from? The things that we believe about life, are they biblical bits of wisdom, or are they information that's coming outside of the Bible? Basically, so we can gauge how much faith we're supposed to put into some of this stuff. So that's kind of the question on secular versus Solomon. So I'm going to give you this bit of wisdom, or this proverb, and you need to tell me whether it's a biblical bit of wisdom or whether it's a secular proverb. And if it is a secular proverb, there will be a country of origin, and you need to try to tell me what part of the world this wisdom is coming from. And that's the name of the game. If you're playing along at the home game, get a pen and paper out. You get 1 point for getting it right. You get an extra point for the country. Everybody ready to go?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
back,
yeah?
Off on the enthusiasm, Dad.
Oh, yeah?
All right, here we go. Number one, secular or Solomon. In the house of the righteous, there is much treasure, but trouble befalls the income of the wicked. In the house of the righteous, there is much treasure, but trouble befalls the income of the wicked. Secular or Solomon? John Buva.
Proverbs.
Proverbs. Dave Herrick.
China.
China. Secular China. Mike Fust.
India.
Secular India. Dan Hudson.
I think I'm going to go Solomon.
Dan's in for Solomon. In the house of the righteous, there is much treasure, but trouble befalls the income of the wicked. Is indeed Solomon, Proverbs 15.
Dang it, Herrick.
Proverbs 15.
What? You know I don't know things. I just follow your lead.
Hey, Mike, once you get through Psalms, you can go right into Proverbs.
Yeah. It'll stranglehold.
There's only 150 Psalms you have to get through.
I lament.
Here we go. Secular or Solomon, where the hostess is beautiful, the wine is delicious. Where the hostess is beautiful, the wine is delicious. Secular or Solomon? Dave Herrick.
Italy.
Secular Italy, Mike.
I was also going to say Italy. I'm going to go with secular and Bolivia.
Lusty eyes in Italy and Bolivia. Dan Hudson.
I was going to say Italy, too. where else do they have wine? Let's
France.
France. I'm trying to narrow it down.
France. Yeah, we'll go France. I was going to say California, but you guys won't let me do that.
Secular California. Secular France.
Secular France, where the hostess is beautiful, the wine is delicious. It is secular French. France.
Yeah! I stole it from Herrick.
Dang it, Herrick.
What?
I know you were really mean in Bolivia. Give me an easy one, Ben. Stop making me look like a fool.
Oh, shoot. Hey, sorry. I got distracted because I looked over, and so we were playing that opening for Secular versus Solomon on one computer, and I just noticed the video was still playing. Mm-hmm. And so, hold on. It melded over to sell El Gran Secretario del Templo de Solomon.
Como ven, en los primeros 15 años desde Pentecostés, hasta que la casa de Cornelio llegó a la fe.
You following this, Herrick?
Durante los primeros 15 años no había creyentes gentiles del todo. Había cientos de miles de creyentes judíos, pero no gentiles del todo durante el...
I got nothing. The base is really kind of thrown him off.
Y a veces, 2,000 años de...
I understood it.
He said the house of the bull.
El Gran Secretary, the Secretary of the Temple of Solomon.
Something like that.
El Escondido del Arca del Pacto.
I thought it said cut your mustache every 3 days or be a fool.
Anyway, if you watch Secular versus Solomon on our YouTube channel, this man comes up next. He looks awesome, by the way. Hold on. Let me get you a shot of him. He's cooler than whatever we got going on. There he is right there.
Oh, yeah. Oh. I need that beard.
That's what I'm saying.
That is an awesome beard.
Duck Dynasty.
Stop listening right now. Go to our YouTube channel, watch Secular versus Solomon, and then let her roll. The next man that comes on will be better than anything you saw. All right, here we go. Secular versus Solomon. A wise man changes his mind, a fool never will. A wise man changes his mind, a fool never will. Secular or Solomon? Mike Foost.
That's secular. Ireland.
Ireland. Dan Hudson.
I'm gonna go secular Greek.
A Greek man.
Secular Ecuador.
Ecuador.
Denver. Solomon.
Solomon. A wise man changes his mind, a fool never will. Dave Herrick, are you willing to change your mind on this one?
I'm going to stick with my answer.
It's rough times. Spanish. You are the predicate. That's rough. Yep. Secular Spanish.
I see what you did there. You used wisdom and fool in the same place to try and trick us, man. Mm-hmm.
Hey, I can't help the Spanish. They're like that. secular or Solomon, whoever is greedy for unjust gain troubles his own household, but he who hates bribes will live. Whoever is greedy for unjust gain troubles his own household, but he who hates bribes will live. Secular or Solomon? Dan.
Solomon.
Solomon.
Solomon, Proverbs 17.
Proverbs 17. Dave Herrick.
Solomon.
Mike.
Dang it, Dave.
Mike, you're your own man. Come on.
I'm barely my own man. I'm 40 to 40, Herrick.
That's your new nickname, 40 to 40.
Solomon.
Whoever is greedy for unjust gain troubles his own household, but he who hates bribes will live. Proverbs 15.
Ooh, close.
15. That's a negative 2 points for posturing, Bubba.
And the call has been thrown and missed.
No, I've been reading Proverbs every week for like a year now. I should know this.
I was within chapters.
every day for a year.
Secular or Solomon, a cat goes to a monastery, but she still remains a cat. A cat goes to a monastery, but she still remains
a cat.
Sounds
like the beginning of a joke.
Secular or comedy, John Bova.
Secular Egypt.
Interesting. Dave Herrick.
You like know, I'm thinking my mom said something like that at one point. But,
Mama Herrick.
Mama Herrick.
Yeah.
A cat may go to a monastery.
I'll go Italy again.
Okay, Mike.
I'm going to go with secular and Rome.
Rome, Dan Hudson.
Oh, there are a lot Rome of cat monasteries in Canada, so I'm going to go Canada, secular.
You say there's a lot of cat monasteries
if you're
in Canada?
Rome, you're in Italy. I'm just saying.
Mike Foost, you're your own man.
I've been an idiot
40.
My whole life. Today is no different.
All right.
Press on, friends.
Mike, I'm going to accept Rome on your behalf.
Yeah,
that's a bummer. You might as well etch it in stone.
It was better than Dan's Canadian cat monastery.
Hey, you'll go up north, get the grotto, keep going north, you'll hit the Canadian monastery.
First of all, what is the point of this? What does he mean? Cat goes to a monastery, but she still remains a cat.
I think it's merely for visiting the monastery. It does not change you.
Yeah, showing up at church doesn't make you a Christian.
But if the cat stayed longer, he would turn into a tiger or a lemur.
Do you think the cat went because it took a vow of silence?
I say the cats never talk.
Ooh. It also is unlikely. Never mind. secular Ethiopia. See, Ethiopia. I'm learning, boys. I'm learning. I've had 2 weeks of things that shouldn't be said on Christian radio. I backed off on it. Ethiopia. Never trust a cat in Ethiopia. It's okay. Putting on a show. Secular Solomon. Here we go. Whoever is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who takes a city. Whoever is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who takes a city. Secular or Solomon? Dave.
It sounds like Solomon, really.
Dave's in with Solomon. Mike.
Solomon does not mention cities. That's a secular and Brazil.
Brazil, Dan Hudson.
I'm going Solomon. I think the ESV has a little twist I'm going Solomon.
Tableside NIV versus ESV chat with Dan Hudson.
I thought I'm fully converted.
So, it's going to be like 85.
And NIV! 84!
Pretty soon he's going to pull these from
That's
the
right.
message.
He's going to have the videotape at his own funeral going, you know, I used to know this in the NIV, but I don't have the words.
Since I quit reading the Bible after age 30.
Psalm 23, you know what? Just screw it. I'm dead.
John Buva.
I go Solomon, Proverbs 22.
Proverbs 22. All right. Whoever is... Did I get around? Yeah, everybody is in. Whoever is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who takes a city. Mike's standing that Solomon doesn't use city is not correct. That is Proverbs 16. 16. The gap is getting wider.
Further away.
I lament.
If you're playing along in the home game, I hope you're doing well. Secular or Solomon, the devil tempts all other men, but idle men tempt the devil. The devil tempts all other men, but idle men tempt the devil. Secular or Solomon, Mike?
Secular. Catholicism.
The Vatican.
Well, go back to Rome.
Rome. Brazil.
Dan Hudson.
There's a lot of devil in Haiti, so I'm going to go secular Haiti.
Play on words, Dan.
There's a lot of devil here. We need a proverb.
Just like in the
we
north.
We need a proverb about that.
There's devil. Lots of devils in the north.
Don't trust that cat. It's putting on airs. John Buva.
Secular Germany.
Secular Germany. Herrick.
Secular Morocco.
The devil tempts all other men, but idle men tempt the devil.
Poland. I've changed my answer.
Secular Turkey.
Dang it.
Turkey. It's rough times.
We can change the name of the game to Mike is a Fool. Save us on postage.
Secular or Solomon, why should a fool have money in his hand to buy wisdom?
He did there? Very clever. Very worldly and clever.
I'm a king of a very small castle. Why should a fool have money in his hand to buy wisdom when he has no sense? Why should a fool have money in his hand to buy wisdom when he has no sense? Secular or Solomon? Mike.
Solomon.
Mike said it was Solomon.
Yeah.
Dan.
I'm gonna go secular, and where's a good money place?
I hope this is not a highlight into your broad life decision making process.
Dan's about to get racist here.
Yeah. Dan, you turn these so bad, man.
What? I can't think of any country.
Are there any countries that have money?
Everyone is poor but me.
They all got high taxes.
We're going to go to Switzerland. With Dan Hudson.
All right, Switzerland, Buva.
Proverbs 12.
Proverbs 12. Dave Herrick.
I'm going to go secular England.
England. Why should a fool have money in his hand to buy wisdom when he has no sense? Is indeed Proverbs 17.
Oh, come 17.
On. Adulations can come my way anytime. Switzerland.
secular or Solomon, the highway of the upright turns aside from evil. Whoever guards his way preserves his life. The highway of the upright turns aside from evil. Whoever guards his way preserves his life. Secular or Solomon? Dan.
Solomon.
Solomon. John Buva.
Solomon. Proverbs 22.
22. Dave Herrick.
Solomon.
Mike.
Solomon. Why would he make mention of highways? That's a modern.
Goes into the city.
It's a modern translation of an ancient proverb.
Ooh.
There's the highways and the byways.
You've been Herricked.
I'm indeed. Now.
Dan helped with highways and byways. Don't forget to credit Dan. It's like they say in the Canadian Cat Monastery, highways are of the Lord.
the great northern Canadian the Cat Monastery.
I feel like I'm going to go Solomon.
The highway of the upright turns aside from evil. Whoever guards his way preserves his life. Proverbs 16.
Boom, 16. 22 that time?
Yeah,
I was six off.
Do you know any proverbs, Boom?
Boom, I like your boldness.
Yeah.
I like that if you're going to go down, you're going down in flames. I like it. Boom has taken the extra step to give the chapter of which no other man has made the extension.
Just throwing that out there, that was the original plan of this game, guys.
Agreed. I haven't been able to transition him over. They don't do chapter headings in the ESV.
Well, the NIV, that was chapter 4.
When I used to read my NIV, it would say, hello, Dan. Now what do I got?
Yeah, what's the translation now?
Before, as I call it, the good old days.
Or before the devil ruled America.
It took over Turkey. Secular or Solomon, the sparrow flying behind the hawk thinks the hawk is fleeing. The sparrow flying behind the hawk thinks the hawk is fleeing. Secular or Solomon? Booba.
Secular. Native America.
That is not a country.
Yes, it is.
No, it is not.
Yep, it is.
You have to pick one.
America.
Which one?
The United States. The United States, hundreds of years ago.
That's that distinct.
No, I mean which North America. Which nation?
This is what you've done for prompting his boldness.
I know. I didn't want. I know better than that. Shoot,
Hopi nation.
There you go.
Yeah, that's right. Dave Herrick, what do you think? Secular or Solomon? Secular Hopi nation.
I mean, it's eagle, right? Or is it hawk?
Sparrow flying behind the hawk thinks the hawk is fleeing.
All right, I'm going to go secular Egypt.
Mike?
That's a good one. Secular and Iran.
We're kind of along the same line. I was thinking Syria, so I'm going secular Syria.
I'm afraid that Dan and I have been in cahoots, and I'm scared.
The sparrow flying behind the hawk thinks the hawk is fleeing secular Japan.
Also the homeland of the Hopi Nation. They moved to the Americas.
Another problem with the slave trade.
1492.
Shoot, was that? Did I not restrain properly? Yeah. My bad. Anyway. Oh. All right. Move it. You're out. That's the end.
What?
That's the end.
I did awesome that round.
Absolutely.
I didn't miss a single one.
Yeah. Del Mesías fueron judíos. Eso lo vemos claramente en el libro de los Hechos Apóstoles Judíos. Y como ven,
this is not the end of the secular solo music. This man is a trans man. He had a beard. Here's my beard.
Is the beard. Gran compañía de Cohenín,
his beard is it's pointed.
A la ley.
He might have a hawk and a sparrow in there.
Don't eran
flee into that man's beard.
Y fueron los seguidores judíos del primer siglo.
I trust him already.
Buena nueva de su Mesías.
Perhaps he has a book that will bless me.
All right. Trusting face? I don't think so.
I trust men with beards. They tell
that is
you
the weirdest thing I've ever heard you
here's,
say.
Here's the long beards is they tell you that when you're a salesman you're not supposed to have the beard, right? People don't trust guys with facial hairs. I'm the opposite. I trust a man who's committed to a long beard. I feel like he's either homeless or trustworthy, and he could be both.
Yeah,
he's either homeless or trustworthy.
Yeah, his company's policy is like you got to cut that beard, and he's like. Nah.
Nope.
Nah.
No, but his performance is good enough that they can't get rid of him because he's just good at his job.
Yeah.
That means that's the man you want to talk to.
Sounds like the kind of guy that can't read through Psalms.
Hey. Obviously, we have a lot in common.
Hey, can you, let me ask you this. Is a beard – I mean, can you blame your beard as if you don't have control of it? Like, let's say it smells. It's taking on an odor of some kind.
No.
If someone say, hey, you stink. I said, I don't stink. My beard stinks. Like, is that –
You cannot blame your beard for your hygiene.
Is it far enough detached from you?
No.
Like,
no.
Okay. It's growing from your face, Ben. What do you mean far enough detached from you? Jeez. Like your end table in your living room is to blame. I'm not responsible for that table.
Would you refer to it in like the third person or something? It's like
I'm thinking anything more than 6 inches out has a mind of its own.
That's ridiculous. We got
to head back home. It's a beard's night to shower.
He stinks. Sweetie, I would love to take out the trash, but the beard is just telling me it's not okay.
I'll take a Big Mac meal, and the beard wants a McChicken.
That's not something I would say.
He's going to leave parts of it in there all week. I know it.
Hey, I can't rule his life. He's his own man.
Dreads? Really? That's what you want her to do? You embarrass my beard.
You look like Jack Sparrow beard. Get off me.
All right, boys. I just thought I had a simple inquiry.
You were wrong. You were so wrong.
I was thinking of growing a friend, all right? I just want a friend.
Are you going to name your beard?
There's nothing
around the
okay
corner
with naming
Shoot,
your beard.
What would I name him?
There's nothing
He
okay.
has to have an older fella's name.
Reginald.
Okay, here. You got 5 seconds or less. What would you name your beard?
Oscar.
I love that, Dan. What? I don't know why. Mike, go ahead.
I didn't have anything. I was going to say Oscar. But that knows no love for Mike. Huh? All right, Billy.
Billy? So far we have Oscar and Billy.
Go ahead, Eric.
I'm not going to name my beard, but I'll name your beard, Ben. So okay. It's Franklin.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All right, I'm okay with that.
It's a
Franklin seems like a reasonable name for a man's beard.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I'm going to ponder.
Multiple syllables.
Franklin's growing off your face,
man. I'm going to ponder these things in my heart. Go ahead, Bubba. What do you got?
Duncan.
That's cool.
Yeah, it is. I have the full red beard, cool. Man. It has to be named Duncan.
Okay. I think that's all right. I've settled on Atticus.
I'm glad we can't speak into your life. That's the way to hold it.
You went from Franklin and you settled on Atticus?
This is all wisdom here, but I feel like Atticus is a strong option.
You have to name Herrick's beard.
And
Franklin is an acceptable answer.
I can do Franklin?
Yeah, you can throw Franklin right back at him.
No, I like Pierce.
Pierce.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's very astute.
It's refined. It's refined.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. I feel like Herrick would have a refined beard that would sometimes be at odds with your casual nature.
I like your beard style.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Aren't you going to wear tails, Dave? All right.
You have a multiple personality disorder coming from your beard.
Here's the deal. I would say the show's gone downhill, but we started in a valley. There's nowhere to go. Let's see here. If you have complaints about the show, that makes sense to me. Send an email at info@lifefromthepath.org. We'd be glad to be entertained by that. And quite possibly change our ways, although if you noticed, I'm not open to feedback on my life. So I suggest you're going to have to deal with it. All right, let's see. Mike, you got some Dear Life from the Path. We got one before the break.
All right, Dear Life from the Path. Recently, a member of the family suggested that my mother Google the name of my sister's new live-in boyfriend. Oh, yeah, this is going to be great. Another family member said he had done it months ago. When Mom did, she saw that he's a convicted sex offender. We were all shocked as he has been very good to my sister and other members of the family. So far, we haven't said anything to my sister or her boyfriend, and I am sure what to do. I have a small child, and it makes me nervous. I don't know if my sister knows, and I don't know how to bring it up. I'm upset with my family member because he didn't say anything immediately after finding this information. I'm upset at my sister if she knows and hasn't been honest with us. And I am upset with this man. What should I do?
Is it just a... Does it sound like they're confident that this is the right guy? Like, it's not another guy by a different name.
I think they post pictures
on
there.
Okay.
Yeah, they're sure it's him.
You have to know what the offense was. Yeah. Was he an 18-year-old having sex with his 17-year-old girlfriend? That puts you on the list.
Did he get caught public urinating?
Did he move
somebody? Because that'll put you on the list.
Yeah. Exactly. Which none of those are appropriate.
We're not defending them, but they play into the context,
that's
right?
That's different than raping your neighbor.
Yeah, if he's had inappropriate contact with a small child, yeah, you got some questions.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think an open and honest conversation is necessary. I mean, you don't hide, you don't like not be afraid of offending. Just say, hey, here's the deal. We didn't expect this. We found this.
What insight do you have? Or like yeah. either it might surprise the person, and you'd want them to know, or if they know, I don't know. It seems like a good opportunity to make sure like where they're coming from. Why are they even permitting kind of this relationship, this circumstance?
Because if you're on the list, you know it. I mean, it's not like going to be a shock to you. What?
Yeah.
I'm on the list. Yeah. I mean, I would expect people to find that out somehow.
Yeah, yeah.
Why did she not do her homework and search the guy out a little bit? I mean,
I don't Google people. I mean,
I was going to say, I don't think I've ever Googled a girlfriend.
I've Googled George Washington. I have yet to meet him, but I mean, that's it.
I don't know. Don't you think if you're in a different life space, like if someone's coming to live at your place,
life space?
Yeah, that's a Christian thing to say. Space of life.
That's where your beard
you're opening your life home space. To him.
This is why I don't listen to Christian radio.
They make up
like
words.
Life space. Yeah.
You tell him, Ben. Thanks, Eddie.
I got a friend who is not single anymore, but when she was single, she would, and each guy she was going to date, she'd do background checks.
Yeah.
And get on police records and stuff and do it all kinds of homework before she'd actually go out with him.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Maybe I'm just a much more trusting of a person. But I don't think I've ever done that or ever will do that.
Well, I mean, let's get to the main point is like, I'm not sure why you're worried about the social ramifications of talking to the man who is a sex offender when your child is, I'm assuming, falling in purvey of what he's done. But like, the social ramifications of that conversation are the least of your worries.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, hey, brother, are you on the sex offender list? Yes. Did you really do this? I did. Okay, thank you. That's what I needed to know. Now, I'm sure if you want to have a farther conversation with him, you know, the Lord's got grace for this stuff, and there's no reason you can't love on him, but, like, you know, your kids are your number one priority when it comes to that type of situation, and, like, being worried about what he thinks or what your sister thinks is just foolish.
Yeah.
You got your priorities weirdly gobbled up. You want to hear on Secular's advice?
Yeah, yeah.
Secular says, first, let me tell you what not to do. Don't remain silent and stew. Tell your sister everything you have written to me and ask if she's aware that her live-in boyfriend is on a sex offender website. If his offense concerned a minor child, it is possible that he is not supposed to be around children. And if he has been, that the authorities would like to know. But first, discuss this with your sister, who may or may not be able to put your fears to rest.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that makes sense. Open conversation. What is, you got another one, Mike?
I only prepared one due to break constraints.
Shootsky, we got a little bit of time.
Okay, hold on. Dear Life from the Path, my sister has been seeing a married man for 2 years. He has told her the only reason he is staying in this loveless marriage is for his daughter. Standard lie of a cheating husband. His wife found out midway through this relationship, but forgave him when he swore he would stop, which of course he didn't. When I told my sister how wrong this relationship is and that she deserves better, I ended up alienating her. I've recently learned that his wife just had a second child, and my sister is pregnant, too. I'm sick to my stomach with all of this. I told her how crazy her situation is, but she refuses to see how horrible the man she loves really is. She says she is fine raising this child alone, and if her lover is in their lives, then she will be satisfied with that. I am the only one freaking out about this. How do I deal with it and not totally lose my sister?
Get over it. Your sister seems to know what's going on. She's a little delusional, but... or else she's just okay being the other woman. But there's not much that you can do from the back seat of the car.
Yeah, that's this has got to be a truth that exists, I think, in any Christ follower's life, right? Frankly, it's probably true in everybody's life. But, like, there's the fact is that you're going to live life in one way for compelling reasons, and you're going to be associated or around people that don't. And that make decisions that aren't that, and that has negative impacts on their lives. In fact, if you're not around people like that, you're not doing the work of the kingdom. Like, if you don't find yourself surrounded by folks like that.
Yeah.
So I actually had this conversation with my oldest daughter this week. We were talking and we were praying, and there's a couple friends of hers that she's been praying for. And she was talking about, you know, how do I help them understand to know Jesus? And we kind of talked through some of that stuff. And, as part of that, I can't think. My youngest daughter said something to the effect of, like, "Well, they'll know he's real when they meet him." And I said, "That's true, sweetheart. But if they have not believed in him, if they have not loved and followed him, they will meet him momentarily, and then, you know, then they will be separated from him." And there was a moment of realization in my 8-year-old's life. She started crying because she was thinking of these friends of hers. And the truth is that you're going to run into circumstances where, as much as you want something for somebody, you have to figure out a way to live a life that is still around people that will do that, that will have either they don't follow Jesus, or they make decisions that are totally, like, just jacking up their life. And if that can consume you, and I don't mean not impact you, it should impact you. That love does that. But if it can consume you where you can't live at all, or, like, you find yourself overcome because of all these issues that other people are having, like, I know that feels like it's coming from a loving space, from a loving position, but it will consume your life. Like, there's a healthy way to be able to deal with that. And that seems hard. That seems very hard. And like, in the moment I was having, I felt very sad. Talking to my daughter, because she was bearing the burden of a friend of hers, and it was probably the first time when she was old enough to really understand that. Like, you know, said, "Oh, we were supposed to love Jesus. Oh, we, you know, we can know God." But I think there was a moment where she was literally bearing the burden of a friend who was not potentially going to spend eternity with Jesus by their own choice. Mm-hmm. And so we talked through that kind of stuff, but it was. It's very difficult to see the weight of other people's lives and other people's decisions sit on other people, whether it's a Jesus thing or not. But the truth is, as Christ followers, like, your whole life is going to be that. And so there's got to be healthy ways. This is where community is just awesome, like being around people that can help share burdens or help, like, has these situations that you can talk through and stuff, because it's not a unique thing. The circumstances might be, but the issue itself is not unique. And it will be something, like I said, if we're actually doing kingdom work, it's going to happen. It has to. That's just the nature of doing it. So I very much sympathize with this woman. I'm sorry that this is her circumstance. It's difficult to watch other people, you know, act in ways that are harming themselves. But the truth is that, like, you can still love her and respond in a healthy way to this so that it doesn't consume your life. And understand that, like, you're not making any progress by being consumed by it. It doesn't change her circumstance at all. And that's kind of the get over. I mean, the truth is get over. The simple answer is it's the right answer. Like, you're going to have to get over the fact that this person is making decisions that are harming themselves, because taking that burden more and more upon yourself, feeling it more, thinking about it more, it doesn't change how it's working in their lives, and it's not going to help. You can acknowledge it, you can understand it, you can pray on it, you can continue to work in loving ways to try to influence that circumstance, but it cannot consume you. You're not called to let it consume you. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to have to fight the tendency to do that, because it feels like you love them more when you let it consume you more. And it's just, it's not true. It just feels that way.
Okay. Secular's advice is, your sister is an adult. She has made her choices and may have to learn the hard way what you have been trying to tell her. Realize that as much as you love her, you cannot live her life for her. Let her know you're there for her and the baby, because she's going to need all the support she can get.
You've been listening to Life from the Path. Thanks for hanging out with us so far this evening. Big thanks again to our sponsors, Westfield Veterinary Hospital, westfieldvethospital.com, and Bob Eisenlauer with the Eisenlauer Team. Go to eisenlauerteam.com. You can catch us during the week at lifefromthepath.org. Shoot us an email with your comments, concerns, and pictures of your dog. That's info@lifefromthepath.org. If we don't see you before then, we will see you next week. If you're on the Truth Network 99.3, if you're on the podcast, we'll be right back with you. Thanks for listening to Life from the Path. The mirror hides the beauty deep inside. So there was this article that we were kind of talking about earlier in the week, and it was 5 mistakes that will destroy your church's effectiveness, and what to do about it. And so I think there's a couple angles here. I'll read the mistakes and maybe see if you guys – I think we had a little bit of reaction to them. Here were the mistakes. 1, promote community service. If people are serving their community because they want to give back, then they will automatically assume a position of superiority over the one they are serving. This is not only unbiblical but dehumanizing. The advantage and, dare I say, appeal of most community service is that it actually costs very little of us. It doesn't impact our budget or our daily lives all that much. Once it's over, we can go back to the way we were before the event. I think there's some truth to that. Like, it is the same thing as, like, are you putting on a show of serving your community, or like, are you investing in these people's lives and doing that?
Like, I think you mean well, but yeah. It's like, man, I think I'm sure we've done that.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, like, hey, we're going to help these people out. Blah, 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 blah. And it's like, ooh, that was pretty convicting to me. To like, well, we're close, but not really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is the kind of doing the things that Jesus told us to do, separated from the heart of Jesus. Like, yeah, you can do these things that you say, I would like to feed people, and maybe you do, but like, if you're just kind of, if it's like, yay, we fed people, now next year we'll do it again, yay. And here's the deal, is like, there's work that is temporary work. We have a food packing event coming up. Like, that's temporary work. Like, we're not going to fly the whole church over to where this food is going. We could, but you know, like, They do need people to pack food and pay for it and send it over. There's nothing wrong with that stuff. Mm-hmm. But, like, if we are getting our validation and saying, good, I've done the work of the Lord by popping in and popping out in people's lives, like, that's a misunderstanding of what the root of all that stuff is. Mm-hmm. Second one was duplicate efforts by starting something new. Stop and think for a second. How many programs and ministries have your church started to serve others in the city? Now, think about how many churches are in your city. How many programs have they started? Usually each of these have been started by godly people who are seeking to love those around them. This has kind of come up for us a few times where, like, we've talked about some things and then appropriately stopped when the question was, who's already doing this? Mm-hmm. Who's doing this and doing it well? Who's doing this and has attachments to other things going on? And how can we help them? Mm-hmm. Because the last thing we need is groups of churches doing the same thing and not together. Mm-hmm. Hi, we're the body of Christ, except for this is from our church. As a matter of fact, like, we've talked, there were some places that we've helped out. And there were sometimes, like, people were identified by, like, the shirt, and I thought, like, that's the last thing I don't really care to put even Life from the Path on a shirt and have everybody shows up in a Life from the Path shirt. It was like, it's not the point. Mm-hmm. It's not the point. And so I do see that a lot with churches, and like it's well intentioned, and I think a lot of it is because we didn't start with the question. Here's what we want to do. We want to help in this way. Is somebody already doing that? And mm-hmm. can we jump on board with something they got going on? And maybe they stink at it. Maybe you do have to start it up. That's cool. Mm-hmm. But like I think it's just a failure to have asked that question mm-hmm. and join in what the people of God are doing as opposed to here's what our church is doing.
Yeah, I love that one. Like if I had to point something that I think that churches are most guilty of with the way that they do ministry, it's that one, right? Like it feels like a lot of backslapping. And we're awesome kind of deal. I mean, well, man, we spend half of our budget on the shirts. On the shirts just so people know where you came from. That's ridiculous. I love this one. This is my favorite one. Yeah, I just don't. Like, that stuff drives me nuts. I wish there would be. I tried to propose it at our youth group, right? I'm like, I wanted to say, this year we're going to do ninja service project.
Ninja, you know, ministry. What I'm
saying? Because every time the youth group goes out, right, everybody busts out their camera, everybody wears the shirt. And then the Facebook is plastered with like 15 pictures of kids throwing water balloons and helping some guy. And I'm like, that's it. We're not going to do that. I said, we're going to get a group of five dudes or five ladies, and we're going to go out and we're going to do something, and you're not going to tell a soul. I mean, you got to tell your parents straight up where you've been, right? But like other than that, like you're not going to tell anybody what you've been doing. You're just going to go out and do something nice for somebody and serve some people and then go back to your daily life like it's just kind of what you do between brushing your teeth and getting to school. And that's it, right?
Yeah.
And like I was so geared up for this, and then it failed out. Nobody was digging on my ninja service projects, and I was doing it by myself.
I'm going to say, it probably would end up being you and me.
Yeah, 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 bummer. Anyway, maybe the shirt's what grabs people in. I don't know.
Mistake number three, view people as projects. Are your city restoration efforts relational or transactional in nature? How many people have had their lives changed as a result of your local missions efforts? Can you name the people you have helped? The reality of most of our efforts is that they consist mainly of one-way transactions where people with financial resources give to those that have less. This allows us to keep people and their problems at a safe arm's distance, but we are left to wonder if those transactions actually help. We don't know what happens next because we don't know the person we've given to. People notice this, and so does the city. So I think there's a part of this element. The reason we've got comfortable with some of this stuff is because somebody reaps, or someone plants other people. Someone sows, other people reap, you know? Mm-hmm. So like, oh, you know, I don't need to know that something happened. And so like there's truth to that. But it's not a universal truth of which it was always okay to like give in a small spurt and run, which sometimes I think it ends up on that transactional level, and we just are comforted with, well, I don't know, we get that guy that we gave the banana to, maybe he found Jesus later on. Well, maybe he did.
This is something that I found really confusing is that donors will send their money off and they don't care what happens to it after that, whereas investors are looking through the with a fine-tooth comb looking at how was that money spent, because they're expecting something from it. Donors, that it's like, hey, I'll write a check and not even bother. It's like that's the end of the story. With investors, that's the beginning of the story. And what I'm more interested in is partnering with investors. I want someone who, you know, this is the beginning of the dialogue, the beginning of the relationship, both financially and in other ways. With a donor, it's like, okay, well, thanks. We've got our seed money, but maybe we'll call you later.
Right. That's a really good comparison. Like I work kind of in the financial industry, and like there'll be guys. I mean, we publish these 130-page black and white 8-point Arial font documents, mm-hmm. and there's guys asking like, hey, there's a paragraph on page 63. I got a question about fund performance on this guy from like the last 6 months. Some there's an anomaly in here, mm-hmm. you know. Like, and they want to talk about that stuff because of what they're expecting an output. Mm-hmm. And think of if we're stewards of God's money. Mm-hmm. Does God call us to donate or invest it, right? Like, is he asking us to just throw it away so that we can get a good self-conscious of spent God's money in that way? Or, you know, are we following it through and really taking God's money and investing mm-hmm. it for the growth of his kingdom, which is why we were given mm-hmm. it to have in the beginning with? Yeah. That's good. That's a good comparison.
I was actually really kind of convicted by this one when I was – they had did a story on some homeless people, a local news story, and they showed them down at the shelter. And, like, it's the first time that I've been able to watch a story about some homeless folks and go, hey, I know that guy. You know what I'm saying? And so, like, I was watching the story. I'm like, I wonder if I know any of these people, you know? And, like, I did. And I thought, you know, what I was convicted about is, like, I've met them. You know, we've handed some stuff out to them. But, like, I don't know them. I don't know them at all. Like, I could tell you their faces and kind of say that I've talked to them a couple times. And I thought, you know, I've spent most of my time doing this stuff, like, on one-off events. And, like, you know, just meeting and filling needs, right? But, like, this news story says they're down at the shelter. I feel like I should be down at the shelter. Maybe we should have some conversations down there, right? Like, because it was really front, it was front end heavy and not a whole lot of back. And so I thought, you know, there's, while I think the service is good and it's what God has designed our hearts to do, the follow through is just as, if not more, important, you know, that they're getting a full story of like, I'm not just down here because I'm a great guy. I'm textbook 40 to 40. You know what I'm saying? I'm not a great guy, but I could certainly come down and get to know you and tell you about Jesus. And so, I don't know, this one kind of convicted me a little bit.
Mistake number four was seek the welfare of your church. You may be thinking, isn't this a little crazy? What if something happens? What if we get taken advantage of? What if someone gets hurt or worse? We don't have the budget for this. The root of all these thoughts is desire to protect our church and ourselves. If the primary concern of the church is the comfort and safety of the church, it is obvious to the city around it and to the people they seek to serve. Well, I think that's true.
Yeah.
I think that's true.
I feel like that one should hit home with a lot of folks.
Well, here's the deal. Is like meeting people the way Jesus met people and following Christ, it's a risky business. Mm-hmm. And you're going to run into risky people. When we were building this building, we had bought some TVs for the joint. For like all the kids areas and stuff so they could watch the kids media and things. And so we had them kind of stored away in the office at the old office area. And there was a guy that was staying there that needed a place to stay. And so, you know, we had agreed to let him stay in there. And then while we were gone, he broke into the office and took the TVs. And like, there's an element of, oh man, but there's also an element of that's kind of the risk that you take by helping people, right? Like some guys will appreciate it and then some guys will steal your TVs. Yeah. And you can then not help anybody and protect your TVs, but then we probably didn't move the kingdom much. And so, like, I kind of looked at it and thought, well, okay, it's just the price of helping people. Sometimes they'll just take your television. it was a bummer.
Yeah, for me, that was the point that I knew I picked the right church. It was when, among other things, we were at least positioned close enough to people who have that kind of need that they would be moved to steal TVs.
Yeah.
And that the church was willing to make themselves vulnerable enough to the community that would happen to them. It's like, okay, this is the church where I need to serve.
Yeah. Yeah. There's probably elements of, you know, you don't bring in the guy that just got off, you know, out of the prison and ask him and his six buddies if they want to stay at your place without trying to put some level of things in place. Yeah. You don't need to be a fool. You don't need to be so open-minded that your brain falls out. Oh, that makes a lot of sense. But like if you spend your time trying to protect the things that you want to use to progress the ministry that you never end up actually doing ministry, like that's a fail. That's a fail.
Like those TVs, they were God's TVs. Yeah. Maybe he knew it was going to happen. I mean, he wasn't worried about it.
Yeah.
You know, and who knows that something from that will ultimately in the middle of the night speak to this guy's heart and he'll be convicted of sin and repent. And I mean who knows? Or maybe nothing will happen from it, but
maybe they'll sell TVs to somebody and then they'll have big money. Who knows? They were on sale when we bought them. The Lord provided a cheap price.
We got more at a cheap price. Not as cheap. I got some Black Friday deals on those TVs. I was kind of disappointed in that, but yeah, whatever. They came. I mean, we're fine.
The Lord was after your haughtiness on your TV buying.
I think we're fine. Mistake number five, ignore training and networking opportunities. Do you have other churches and organizations that you're connected to that are on the cutting edge of biblical resources and training? Do you have a support network that will help you make great decisions about what's next for your church? Have our pamphlet. These mistakes can be crippling and a big waste of time, resources, and money, but they are avoidable. That was the end of that paragraph. These mistakes was he provided solutions. Sorry. Ignoring training and network opportunities. This is kind of the same deal, which is like, have you created your own castle? Are we building our pathway kingdom that says, well, it's like a Ponzi scheme, but like an Amway type system, right? Mm-hmm. Like we're all salespeople of the gospel, and we all report up to the big guy. Mm-hmm. And that's it's not thinking of it correctly.
Yeah. It's kind of like the music that we were doing a few years ago when we had the what was the thing we kept doing in the Midwest?
Spirit Midwest.
Then all of a sudden, all these other churches were like, "Hey, we'll do our own thing." And pretty soon, everything just failed because why couldn't we all just do it together as one big group? You know, and then we all want to have our own empires and
the way that went is we had broadcast from Spirit Midwest for 3 years. And then they saw there was a bunch of different churches that started inviting some of these artists at different times and saying, well, either we could do it better or we want to do it in our own place. And they did. Nothing was very well attended. And now those churches aren't doing anymore. I haven't seen any church. There's one, another festival that is kind of taken up. But, like, that whole infrastructure kind of crumbled, right, because people said, oh, hey, there's something good going on. We want to hold it at our place. And, like, here's the deal. I like our place. But, like, we've been talking through a couple events that we're going to do. And I'm like, I don't really have a strong – unless it's the right – if it's the right place, then cool. If it's not the right place for it, we'll do it somewhere else. Like, I don't know what we care. It's just a building. It's just a place to put something. So – And acting like we are not surrounded by other people that love Jesus and that are trying to do his work is just foolish. And fighting for our own resources, even to the extent that, like, you know, if we're trying to build up we've talked about, actually, we do some classes this year. And one of my questions was, is like, who at some of these other churches that we know would be able to help teach some of these classes? Like, we can spend a bunch of time trying to draft a bunch of our folks and drag them around and pull them and try to fill them with a bunch of knowledge they don't have so they can teach a class that we may or may not be pining for, or find a guy that knows this stuff and say, hey, man, you want to come by and share what the Lord has given you?
Yeah.
Because that sounds awesome.
Yeah. Well, think of, like, that exact same example with the music festivals or whatever. Like, think of if number one would have been true here, right, instead of starting – or number two. If, you know, people were starting a bunch of things on their own for, like, well, where's God already working? Where's he doing? Where can we help, right?
Yeah.
Like, it would have been to the nth degree, the thing would have been rocking.
Yeah.
You know, and instead we halved it and split it five ways, and now, we literally have nothing. Like, it's just poor, you know? And, like, and for whose glory and what end did that happen?
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't a good one. And so, like, I don't know. I feel like the churches are – and this is me too. You know, I'm not taking myself out of the pool, you know? Like, we're guilty of that, you know? And it's just it's losing sight of the big picture kind of thing.
Yeah. So the solutions to these things, number one was teach biblical mercy. And this is one of the – I really like this. Is apart from Christ, we are poor, needy, enslaved, broken, and desperate. We don't help because we have so much. We help because we are no different. And so I really like that. And it's, the truth is like – you know, what's accurate about all these things, it's not even a church level. It's a personal – it's a following Christ level. Right? Like, do I want to share my faith with other people because I think I'm supposed to, or because I can't help it, right? Because I'm following Christ and I can't help but talking to other people about him. Like, are we talking about trying to set in parameters? Do we put together the events, the transactional events, because I think I should? Like, that's I think I should. I should do this thing, so I'm going to, as opposed to I'm already there. I was already feeding the guy. I didn't have to wait for someone to put something together. I put it together because it needed to be done, or I saw someone else do it and I jumped on board. Those are things that we are compelled to do as people that are following Christ because Christ is doing them or did them, or things that we think would make us look like we're more following Christ, and then we do those types of transactional things. And that's basically the root of all of these things is, like, if we're following Christ, we don't get caught on a facade because we're following Christ. We're not putting on a facade. We're just doing the things that following Christ does, as opposed to, well, we should help people. We should evangelize. We should feed these people. And, like, those are our attempts to look like we should, as opposed to our actual effort to follow like we should. And that actually, I think, solves the root of what most of these things are. And so the number two was create solutions. How could your church create real solutions to the problems plaguing your city? There are no doubt unique gifts and strengths in your body that could be an incredible asset to the rest of the city. Problem is they don't see the church is a relevant solution to the problem. It would be an amazing picture of unity for the church to stop creating duplicative programs and start investing their time, money, and resources in helping other groups succeed. I would contend that it would also be better stewardship of resources and ultimately more successful. I like this. Three was develop people through relationships. Take time for individuals. Christ taught the disciples to kind of do the same. Developing people requires relationships, and relationships are messy and complicated. And part of this is time. I'm in the same way, like, I am leveraged to the extent that the people that need me most couldn't get me if they wanted to when they needed me the most. And I've done that, and that's poor. And so, like, you can't be all things to all people, and in your attempt in doing so, you end up being very unhelpful to most.
Doesn't Paul say be all things to all people?
I have become all things to all men in an attempt to win some.
But
it's kind of contextual. He's not saying he's everything at every time. It's, hey, I went to this village and I became like them. And then I went to these other folks and I became like them in order to speak the gospel in a way that makes sense to them.
Well, if you add the context, it takes all the zing out of my zinger.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It does that.
Dang it, Eric.
It does that. So, you know, like, I was thinking about that again today. And, like, you know, everybody's tied up with worthy things, right? But, like, if there's six guys in my life that if they called me and they had something go on, you know, do I have the leverage? Do I have the time to be able to go over there without impacting a bunch of stuff negatively and spend time with them? I probably haven't created that much, left that much room in my life to do those things, and that's poor, and that's not set that up well enough. So some of the times, even if we try to create relationships, it still is a bit transactional, even though we're trying our best to put it in with the model that we live. Sometimes we just got to change how we live, so that we can actually have relationship versus a series of what are well-crafted, meaningful transactions. Number four, seek the welfare of your city. This guy works. Jeremiah 29:11 may be one of the most quoted passages used to encourage others. Ironically, that verse actually falls in the middle of a passage where God is telling a conquered and exiled Israel to remain in Babylon and make it their home. He tells them to seek the welfare of their city. It is in the midst of this difficult calling to make a foreign land their home and seek the prosperity of the city and people that have conquered them that he gives them the comfort of Jeremiah 29:11. So dig in. Actually care about what's going on around you and not leave it to other folk. And then number five, seek out training and network opportunities. Get connected to organizations like For the City Network who provide ongoing and intensive training and networking opportunities so that your church can be an effective salt and light in your city. I thought those were good. Mm-hmm. I thought those were good. I think they're real things that churches that are attempting to do the right thing are struggling with. Mm-hmm. But I don't think the solution is just to say change how we act, right? Like at the root of it, these things don't exist if we're not posturing a little bit. And so it's probably we got to be a little bit honest with as we are as individual Christ followers and as a church and say, where am I posturing? Like, where am I following Christ and my life is a natural outpouring of following him? And where am I posturing a little bit to try to look more like it without actually following to get there? So, you know, do what you are. Like, there's personal things for me. It's easy to look at a church body and say, oh, well, the whole church is stinking. I've got room on these. And there's some ways where I'm not following, I'm posturing, trying to fake it till I make it. So, anyway, that's at thevergenetwork.org. It's five mistakes that will destroy your church's effectiveness and what to do about it. I think that's all we got going on. Anybody else got anything kind of hanging around on them?
No.
Good. Excellent. I love what you're talking about here. Everybody knows everything. Sorry. All right. Well, if you're hanging out on the podcast, thanks for doing so. We really do appreciate it. Thanks for listening. Even if you do have legitimate complaints or suggestions for the show, or, hey, you want to meet for some hibachi or another type of buffet, we're going to do that probably into March sometime. We're going to hit up another buffet, and we'd love to have you come out with us.
We have to plan our buffet stops 2.5 months out?
Yeah. Hey, you last time I tried to put a buffet together, it took like a month to finagle dates correctly.
Yeah.
Sometime in March.
All right, that's
fair. I got to save up for the buffet. Hey, thanks a lot, man. Thanks for listening to Live from the Past. We'll see you next week. What you see and you just